The Church of God, the Eternal, presents the 63rd message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled, Just What Do You Mean, Faith Once Delivered? Given in Eugene, Oregon, June 17th, 2023.
All right, this afternoon I'm going to try to finish this sub-series on the Genesis creation. This will be now the tenth and final message in this series. It's a sub-series of my overall theme, Just What Do You Mean the Faith Once Delivered? And the reason that the Genesis creation is a part of the Faith Once Delivered series is because the teaching concerning the origin of the earth, as well as then the description of events that took place in Genesis chapter 1 and 2 and 3, all are part of that which we receive by divine revelation through a chosen servant. And as I've already shown to you, it is very different than the majority of those who call themselves Christian. It's very different from what most of them believe and teach. So there's smatterings, elements of the truth. And you'll find that whether it's with these fundamentalist Christians who believe that the earth is only 6,000 years old, there's also truth in part with the atheistic evolutionary crowd, and including their scientists. So what you have is a mixed bag, but that's what you get in the world that is led by Satan the devil. You get a mixture of truth and error. That's the hallmark of the enemy. The trick is being able to differentiate the true facts from the lies and the deception. And so what I've tried to show to you is what the real truth is based upon the revelation of Jesus Christ, which takes the truth out of both camps and shows you the reality of what actually happened in ancient history and the relevance of all of that for us today. What have I emphasized? I continue to emphasize now, why does this matter? The same way I reconfirmed to you last time, Adam did not commit the very first sin in the universe. And that's what a lot of these fundamentalist Christians believe, that Adam and Eve committed the very first sin in the universe. No, that's not true. He committed the first sin within the human family. But the first sin was committed by an angel, not by a man. It was Lucifer's sin and the one-third of God's angels that followed him into rebellion who committed the first sin long before Adam and Eve were ever brought into existence. And that is the secret to understanding why there were two physical catastrophes that took place upon this earth, not just one. There was an angelic rebellion that resulted in the destruction of the surface of this earth. And then after a recreation, according to God's will and purpose, and man being placed upon this earth, then you had a second catastrophe that happened approximately 2,000 years after that with Noah's flood. And the synopsis is that the earth's geological history actually shows scientifically proof of both of those catastrophes. And this is the thing that the fundamentalists don't want to believe. So they try and force the facts into saying that there was only Noah's flood. Or the evolutionists that say, you know, life started in a simple form and evolved over millions of years into the complex and always existed with this uniformitarianism, that's dead wrong too. So I think there's incredible value in those old articles published by the Radio Church and the Worldwide Church of God that makes the point to clarify the truth, which is why I spent a lot of time reading. Well, for some of you that don't like me to read, too bad, you're going to hear a lot of reading in this final message in the series as well today. Because the truth is, now there's some of you that actually will go back and find those old articles, like I recommend that you do, and read them for yourselves and study them, good for you. And there's a lot of you who won't do that, which means if I don't read it to you, you won't hear it. So for the benefit of you, I'm going to read to you today so that you have the gist of the substance of our belief concerning the revelation of Jesus Christ, concerning the origin that is described in Genesis chapter 1 and 2. So last time we examined the actual findings of Earth's geologic layers, which might truly be millions of years old. The Earth might literally be millions of years old. We don't know how old it is. We compared what the evolutionist scientists conclude about those geologic facts versus what God says actually happened by quoting much from one particular old article, the Plain Truth article entitled Dinosaurs Before Adam, published in November 1963. Now, kudos to the one member of the church who followed up after that message last couple of weeks ago and asked for clarification, because in quoting from that article, Dinosaurs Before Adam, this individual noted that there was a paragraph that I cited that could not be found in the 1963 article. And the question to me was, where did you get this paragraph? I could not find it. And I give that individual special kudos because it was actually in an update to the article that was published in 1972. So that same article was updated and expanded. And I didn't make reference to that when I cited from the original November 1963, but one person caught that and at least brought it to my attention and asked for clarification, and I pointed them to the 1972 article. So that one person gets extra kudos because I know that they actually went back and read the source material. And it wasn't someone in North America, by the way, but I'm not going to tell you who. So we're answering the objections to fundamentalist young earth creationists, or YECs, who claim that the gap theory, which is what they call what we believe, they say that the gap theory is a cop-out to the atheistic scientists, so that if we spend our time trying to come up with a theory to debunk what the evolutionists say, we've already copped out, rather than just accept the simple Bible conclusion that the earth is only 6,000 years old and God brought dinosaurs and man into existence during what is described in Genesis 1 and 2. And if we try and go back and say that the earth is actually very much older than man, they call that a compromise and a cop-out. Well, it's not true. It just happens to be the fact, and it is supported by the geology. And no, we're not buying into the evolutionist theory. We absolutely call out their gross error. We're going to call out all of the error in both camps. What the geology proves is that there truly was a global catastrophe that killed all living things to end the age of the dinosaurs. The scientists call that the Mesozoic era. And again, as I quoted from you last time, they say that it only killed 80%. Why? Because they have to believe that life continued to in this uniform fashion from beginning to end. They can't acknowledge that there was ever a 100% extinction of living creatures on the earth, because then the evolution would have had to start over from scratch, wouldn't it? They don't believe that. But there was a catastrophe that killed 100% of all living things on the earth. That was the angelic rebellion that resulted in that destruction, which turned the earth into a state of chaos and confusion, tohu and bohu. Then next, it's true that there was a whole new spontaneous arrival of life upon this earth. Scientists see that. It's all found in the geologic record. This catastrophe that killed everything, and then on top of that are all these layers of fossils from a whole lot of new complex life. How did that happen? Because that was the point at which God brought into existence that new revival, that recreation, if you will, of animals as well as man upon the earth. They call it the age of the mammals, the Cenozoic era. We just recognize it as the recreation when God first put man on the earth. So we also saw a reminder that neither the religionists nor the scientists get it right. The medieval church, the Catholic Church in particular, taught three basic false premises. Well, they taught a lot of false premises, but concerning the physical history of the earth, or let's say astronomical or geological things. Basically, the medieval church taught that the earth was new, meaning about 6,000 years old only. You know what else they taught at the same time? They taught that the earth was flat, and they also taught that the earth was the center of the solar system or the universe. So these were part of the dogmas of the Catholic Church, and they claimed that the Bible confirmed it. So in order to be a good Christian, you had to believe that the earth was only 6,000 years old, that the earth was flat, and that the earth was the center of the universe, meaning the sun and the moon and everything else revolved around the earth. And all of those were false. So I'll pause for a moment and still address any of you who secretly are holding to the flat earth theory. I hope you'll dismiss it, because it goes all the way back to the Catholic Church, by the way. You think it's modern just because you find people trying to tout it on YouTube? No, it goes back to the false church. Just saying. So why does that have to do with the price of eggs in China? There was this huge backlash after the Renaissance era to reject false religious ideology and the Bible by scientists who became eloquent in discovering new facts concerning the earth. And so when you had Copernicus and Galileo later were able astronomically to confirm the fact that the earth is not in the center with everything revolving around it, that the earth actually revolves around the sun, it gave the Catholic Church a black eye. Now, that's why they resisted it, why they called Copernicus a heretic, Galileo also, and put much pressure on them to renounce their heresy. But it was true. Through observation, which God permits man to learn and to acquire, it's evident that the earth actually revolves around the sun. So the church got a black eye over that. Oh, well, the church claimed that the Bible said it. So not only the church was wrong, the Bible is wrong. That's the conclusion by the enlightened scientist. Can't trust the Bible because it says the earth's the center of the universe. You can't trust the Bible because it says the earth is flat. Can't trust the Bible because it says the earth is only 6,000 years old. So the Bible, i.e. God, gets a black eye because of the misuse of the Bible to support fallacy by the so-called church. So what you have with modern scientists and atheist is a rejection of the Bible as a knee-jerk reaction to counter the proven falsehoods of what supposedly is the church. No, the true church of God has not been in error, and the Bible certainly is not in error. It is the misappropriation of the Bible that is responsible for the error. All right, I'm going to quote a lot from a 1973 Plain Truth article, June 1973 in particular, entitled Why the New Creation Evolution Controversy. Actually, I'm only going to give one citation from this one, but I've got another one I'm going to read a lot more from this afternoon. June 1973, Why the New Creation Evolution Controversy. This summarizes a little bit of what I've just told you. Under a subheading entitled The New Religion. Most, it says, have never understood the true biblical record. Few have ever looked into the Bible to see what it really says. Many misguided theologians have misinterpreted the Bible, and equally misinformed scientists, seeing that the theologians were wrong, assumed the Bible was also wrong. Consequently, evolutionists rejected religion. But in so doing, they invented a new religious faith. The dogma of evolution, cause, principle, or system of beliefs held to with ardor and faith. Belief in evolution fits this definition. I think that's very revealing. In essence, If you are one that believes in the evolutionary theory, Darwinism, if you will, you have embraced a religion. Don't say you reject religion and embrace science. No, your scientific dogma is itself a religion if you attach yourself to it. It's just a different religion than those from antiquity. This article goes on to say, the world has traded in one superstition for another. Religious dogma has given way before the onslaught of evolutionary faith. I love that term. Evolutionary faith. The iron hand of medieval theologians has been replaced by the educated fist of evolutionists. I love that statement too. The educated fist of evolutionists. Both the modern religion of evolution and the medieval religion inherited from ancient Babylon are in error. Overlooked and misunderstood by both sides is the simple, factual, logical record of the Bible, which squares with the known facts of science. So I think that was succinctly well put to confirm what we believe and why. All right. To close up this series, I want to talk about Noah's flood. So we already spent a lot of time talking about the pre-Adamic catastrophe brought on by angels. And I can't help but cover it a little bit more on, well, a lot more on that, because Noah's flood has to be in contrast to that first catastrophe. But we're going to start by actually reading from the Bible. And I'm going to do this quickly so I can get to the interpretation here that you find in our old church articles. So Noah's flood describes starting in Genesis 6, verse 5 through 8. And I'm going to read this. You know, this isn't really a Bible study where I go through and analyze this in detail. I'm reading quickly through Genesis 6 and 7 in order to give you the gist from the Bible to put in perspective then the analysis that we're going to read from others. Genesis 6, beginning in verse 5, and God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually, and it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Eternal said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and the creeping thing and the fowls of the earth, for it repenteth me that I have made them. Don't misunderstand that this God made a mistake, and therefore he's fixing his mistake. That's not what this word repent means. But to see what man did to himself, and he knew it because he knows the end from the beginning, but still not enjoying to see his beloved children on this earth suffer at their own hands because of their rebellion, he was going to do them a favor by mercifully putting them to sleep until a time that they could be called and taught the truth. The Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. Verse 8, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Verse 13 says, and God said to Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Drop down to verse 17. And behold, I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven. And take note, because we're going to see this in the analysis. What was destroyed? What did God say he was going to destroy with Noah's flood? Those things that breathe air. It becomes important, so keep that in mind. Wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. But with thee, he said, will I establish my covenant, and thou shalt come into the ark, thou and thy sons and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee, and of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark to keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female. Wouldn't that be a problem today for people to interpret that, because they don't even know what male and female is anymore? Should be simple. It certainly was to God, and it certainly was to Noah. Verse 20, of fowls after every kind, and of cattle after their kind, of every creeping thing of the earth after his kind, two of every sort shall come unto thee to keep them alive. So I will already give you a preview to the interpretation you're going to find in the church article I'm going to cite. If dinosaurs existed at this time on the earth with man, they were air-breathing reptiles that then should have been preserved and brought through the flood. The fact that they are not here means they were already long dead. So that's your answer in the back of the book, by the way. Verse 21, and take thou unto thee of all food that is eaten, and thou shalt gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them. Thus did Noah according to all that God commanded him, so he did. All right, continuing chapter 7. Genesis 7, verse 1, and the Eternal said unto Noah, come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation. Of every clean beast thou shalt take to thee by sevens. So here's a confirmation that the distinction between clean and unclean beast to provide meat for man was known long before Mount Sinai and Moses. It went all the way back to the beginning. Also a confirmation that human beings were intended by God to eat meat, by the way, for anybody who's inclined toward vegetarianism, no. They brought clean beast onto the ark so that they would have a meat supply during the year plus that these eight people were sequestered on board the ship. Of every clean beast thou shalt take to thee by sevens, the male and his female. Of the beasts that are not clean, by two, the male and his female. Of fowls also of the air by sevens, the male and the female, to keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth, for yet 7 days and I will cause it to rain. This isn't saying it's going to rain for 7 days. For in 7 days is when this flood was going to start, as you're going to see. For yet 7 days and I will cause it to rain upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights, and every living substance that I have made will I destroy from off the face of the earth. And Noah did according to all that the Eternal commanded him. And Noah was 600 years old when the flood of waters was upon the earth. And Noah went in, and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him into the ark because of the waters of the flood. Of clean beasts and of beasts that are not clean, and of fowls and of everything that creeps upon the earth, there went in two and two unto Noah into the ark, the male and the female, as God had commanded Noah. And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were upon the earth. So 1 week after God made this pronouncement and everything had already been in plan, even up to 100 years before in the creation of the ark, let alone then the final filling of the ark with all of the substance that God commanded. 1 week later, the rains came. Verse 11, and in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day, were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. And I will stop right there and emphasize there are two things that God did to bring a flood to the earth. And can I say first, I'm going to stop and tell you the difference between the pre-Adamic flood, what the YECs call Lucifer's flood. What is the main difference? They don't believe in that, although it's true. What's the difference between that and Noah's flood? Noah's flood was at the direct hand of God to flood the earth. God did this. Satan didn't do it. The destruction of the earth before happened at the hand of the rebels. Rebel angels actually brought on the destruction of the surface of the earth. So there's a difference in the source of the two catastrophes. All right. The same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up and the windows of heaven were open. Two sources of water that flooded the earth. It wasn't just rain from heaven. What were these fountains of the great deep? What it's talking about is a source of water underneath then that actually sprang up and became a part of the flood waters. I don't know in the original creation or the recreation how much of a water table there existed that doesn't exist today. Now, we have aquifers of all kind around the globe, but apparently there was a whole lot more water under the surface of the earth. And that was a source of the flood waters, besides God opening up the heavens and dumping water from on high, also these great fountains around the globe that came up from underneath that added all of this additional height of water so that every mountain, literally, the highest of the hills and the mountains was underwater after this event. So keep that in mind. All the fountains of the great deep broken up and the windows of heaven were open. Verse 12, and the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. That's how long it rained. That's how long the water spewed out from below and down from on high. 40 straight days. Verse 13, in the selfsame day entered Noah, Shem, and Ham, and Japheth, the sons of Noah, and Noah's wife, the three wives of his sons, with them into the ark. They and every beast after his kind, and all the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth after his kind, and every fowl after his kind, every bird of every sort. I'm not going to get into the distinction and the analysis of what God means by a kind of creature. They use that term in science today, but they use it in a different way. But we are talking about the broad classifications of creatures that God made, from which many varieties can spring. So if you have a parent set of a kind, then from them and their offspring and offspring's offsprings can then generate additional unique varieties. They're all of the same general classification called a kind. They all have that history and that connectivity, and yet there is a lot of variety that comes out. The same way a lot of variety came out of the family of man, because all peoples of all races came out of one original family, Adam and Eve. And yet springing from those two came all of the diffuse variety that you see in the family of man today. Same thing happens in nature with plants and with animals. So it wasn't necessary that every single, you know, a set of every single sub-variety be put on the ark, but all of the basic kinds needed to be accounted for so that then after the flood, they could produce and then spontaneously, according to God's creation in nature, then all of these sub-varieties could reemerge, which is why we have the proliferation that we have on the earth. Verse 14, they and every beast after his kind, all the cattle after their kind, every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth after his kind, every fowl after his kind, every bird of every sort. And they went in unto Noah into the ark, two and two of all flesh, wherein is the breath of life. And they all went in male and female of all flesh, as God had commanded him, and the Eternal shut him in. Verse 17, and the flood was 40 days upon the earth. That's not the flood waters were 40 days on the earth. The flood, the rain itself was 40 days upon the earth, and the waters increased and bare up the ark, and it was lift above the earth, and the waters prevailed and were increased greatly upon the earth, and the ark went upon the face of the water. And the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. 15 cubits upward did the waters prevail. Don't get into the, you know, you can look it up in the commentaries to say how high was a cubit and so what was the height of the water. It was tall enough to cover the highest mountain. And the mountains were covered. Verse 21, and all flesh died that moved upon the earth. Now, again, it doesn't say all flesh or all flesh died on the earth, because it didn't kill the marine life. The fish and everything that lives in the water survived Noah's flood. All flesh died that moved upon the earth, both of fowl and of cattle and of beast and of every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth, and every man. So all your air-breathing creatures, all in whose nostrils was the breath of life, lest you have any doubt. All in whose nostrils was the breath of life of all that was in the dry land. So God made sure, this almost sounds repetitive, doesn't it? It's like everything that creeps on the earth, everything that moves on the earth, everything on dry land. And why is that important? Because it confirms it didn't kill everything that's in the water. All right. So man classifies, for instance, whales as mammals, right? Because they're air breathing, but they survived because they live in the water. All right, so I would say, I suspect that God would classify them differently, because he did so concerning the things that move on the dry ground as opposed to the things that live in the water. And even though they're air breathers, including sea turtles, but they can survive for a long time underwater before they have to come up and take a breath, and there's no reason that they had to die. So God makes it very plain here, in whose nostrils was the breath of life of all that was in the dry land. If you were a dry land dweller, and you weren't of the eight people or the animals that was on Noah's Ark, you died. Verse 23, and every living substance was destroyed, which was upon the face of the ground, both man and cattle, and the creeping things, and the fowls of the heaven, and they were destroyed from the earth, and Noah only remained alive, and they that were with him in the ark, and the waters prevailed upon the earth 150 days. Okay, so before, so they were on the ark for over a year, and not to get into the timelines and everything that you can put together from what God revealed in Genesis, before, as the water, this was just the waters rising. And then the rain stops for after 40 days and the waters continue to rise. And then at some point, the tide turns, if you will, and the waters start to descend. But it wasn't until more than a year before there was dry land in order for them to exit the ark. Okay, and that's not our topic. But this gives you the gist now for what we're gonna talk about. So what is our evidence for two separate worldwide catastrophes? Distinguishing this event, very well documented in the Bible concerning Noah's flood, from that which we conclude also happened long before man was put on the earth. All right, here's the one I'm going to cite from a lot. The Plain Truth article, February 1964, entitled Geology Reveal, Two Creations, Two Worldwide Floods. Again, we're answering the naysayers and the antagonists, especially of these fundamentalist young earth creationists, who poo-poo the gap theory and say it doesn't hold water with geology. Yeah, it does. And the answer in the back of the book is the fact that the earth layers show two distinct events which happen, and they are not related. And that's what this article is going to highlight. Geology revealed two creations, two worldwide floods, under a subheading entitled Why Geologists Don't Understand Geology. So here, and a lot of this article does focus its attention on the atheistic evolutionist scientists, but we're going to get to the point where it also deflates the arguments of these so-called Christian fundamentalists. Geology, it says, geologists can never understand the facts of geology. They refuse to acknowledge that during the rebellion of Satan and his demons against God, the pre-Adamic earth was destroyed. This knowledge makes clear why the strange world of dinosaurs, flying reptiles, and all the other strange plants and animals of the age were first suddenly buried in sedimentary rock and in the older coal seams. Now I stop and focus because, now I mentioned to you last time, fossil fuels, oil and gas that we get basically by the decayed bodies of the dinosaurs and all these reptiles. But furthermore, what I didn't mention to you is what this article emphasizes, which is the source of coal. And coal is still a huge resource that we use for fuel, don't we? Now, the eco-muffins are trying to get rid of it, you know, because they say, well, you know, it's carbon-based and is destroying the earth through global warming. So they're trying to get rid of coal production. But coal is still very much one that man depends upon. Where'd the coal come from? It's actually the remains of all the plant life, not the animal life, but the plant life that died in that first catastrophe, which this article is going to show you. So again, were first suddenly buried in sedimentary rocks and in the older coal seems. Neither can geologists understand the facts of geology until they realize that Noah's flood buried the remains of man, warm-blooded mammals, and many other creatures as fossils in overlying sedimentary rocks. So what it's saying is two different strata geologically on this earth easily differentiated. One very much older, which is where all your oil is and your coal. Very different from the higher levels of sediment, which are as a result from Noah's flood. These, the article says, these post-Adamic deposits, in most cases, were laid down on top of the sedimentary rocks formed by the pre-Adamic catastrophe. Sometimes the deposits from Noah's flood were laid down on the original rock surface of the earth, and earlier deposits were later washed in by the flood and covered them in an inverted order. In other words, so there are places on the earth where if you looked at it, you said, well, but it looks like these mammals and deposits from the age of mammals, the Cenozoic era, are underneath some that they say are part of the Mesozoic age of dinosaurs. And that's where, and this article doesn't actually highlight it, but this is where I will insert and say, if it's true that part of the way that God brought the flood upon the earth was not only rain from heaven, but fountains from the deep, what would that have done? I mentioned this briefly to you before. What happens if you have a water main under the city break? And you've got all this water pushing up. It displaces a lot of dirt and concrete, doesn't it? Oh, yeah. Water is incredibly destructive when it's under pressure. So what if you've got all of these fountains God created and water sources, aquifers, if you will, under the surface of the earth that he unleashes like a fire hydrant gone bad? What is that going to do to all of the layers of the earth that are above it? It's going to mix it up like a big blender, that's what. So is there an explanation why there are certain places where you'll find this mixing with the mammals down lower? And so, yeah. And one example of that, and this is strictly theory speculation, but what about the origin of the Grand Canyon, just as an example? Now, the geologists say, well, the Grand Canyon was formed over millions of years by the small little Colorado River slowly wearing away the layers until it went from the top of the surface all the way down to the bottom where it is today. Really? Maybe. What if instead the Grand Canyon was the site of one of those fountains that was unleashed by God and literally displaced in a very short period of time all of the earth and the rock in that very region to create, in essence, over just a few days, that huge chasm? Is that possible? If you believe the Bible record, I say it's very, very possible. There are some who say, and just somebody pointed me even very recently to someone on the internet, but not talking about the fountains, but saying, ascribing the Grand Canyon to the Noah's flood, not to an erosion over millions of years, literally by talking about the displacement of all the earth and saying literally that the Colorado River was lower in elevation at its source than the rim of the canyon. How does a river flow uphill? I thought that was pretty compelling. How does the Colorado River flow uphill to start the erosion? It wouldn't. Unless the canyon was created first and the river came later. I suspect that's likely what happened. So, but where were these other fountains around the globe that came up from underneath to provide a huge source of that water which flooded the entire earth besides the rains that came down from the heavens? And where was then all of this mixing that took place? But for the most part, though, the geologic record shows a distinction between the older pre-Adamic levels of destruction, the chaos of the destruction of the dinosaurs, separate and apart from that which was in the higher layers. All right, continuing this article, geology revealed two creations, two worldwide floods. Once we know what the Bible reveals, that a pre-Adamic creation was destroyed by a worldwide catastrophe because of the sins of Satan and his angelic followers, we can understand the geologic history of the earth. There is no possible way to explain the sudden death of many complex creatures in the bottom layers of the earth's sedimentary rocks other than by the obvious fact that a pre-Adamic destruction by water suddenly buried these fossil forms. So I'm going to stop right there and say what this article also doesn't address. And again, I said, what's the difference between that original destruction by rebellious angels versus Noah's flood that was literally instituted and implemented by God? We know that Noah's flood killed everything by water. Everything drowned. What is not clear is what actually killed the dinosaurs. Now, we know that ultimately the entire earth was flooded because that's the state that you find in Genesis 1. The waters covered the earth. But that does not mean that they all drowned. This article actually assumes the possibility that everything drowned like in Noah's flood. I would just stop and say that's not a confirmation. The scientists believe that it could have been created initially by a meteor strike. And I don't rule that out at all. There is ample evidence of huge meteor craters on this earth, which could have actually prompted the destruction of the atmosphere on this earth and killed. That's what they think killed the dinosaurs, is a meteor strike. I don't rule that out. In Satan's rebellion, maybe it was. I mean, we were always taught that the pockmarks on the moon surface is a result of Satan's rebellion. So why not ones that actually impacted the earth? So the end result of Satan's rebellion, yes, was a flooded earth. I just distinguished, but we do not know if everything drowned. Did the dinosaurs drown, or were they killed and then buried underwater? This article and the other articles in the old literature don't address that, to my knowledge. So I just put that out there as a consideration. So, and we don't need to conclude everything died, and that's all those fossils prove that they are dead, and they all died at the same time. But what we can't know is what killed them. Maybe they were all incinerated. Maybe it was fire that took over the surface of the earth first. And then everything was covered by water. I just leave it open. I don't think we need to conclude. All right. Let's segue over to another Plain Truth article from May of 1977 entitled "The Bible in the Dinosaur World." Now, so later one, 1977, and it has a lot of the confirmation things from the earlier articles that I've already read to you. I'm going to highlight some things in this one that are unique, which I think add to it. And here's a sample of what this article from 1977 looks like, by the way. And the thing I like most about this article is there is a chart. This is page 32 of the Plain Truth, May 1977. And if you're a visual person, you will love this chart. This actually shows a summary of what the geologists find concerning all of the fossils that are found in the geologic record, divided as the scientists do between the Cenozoic, the Mesozoic, and the Paleozoic eras. Remember last time I read to you about the trilobites and all these other complex creatures that lived in the ocean as opposed to the ones on the land? Well, this actually shows a visual description of the time in the layers of the earth when these creatures are found. And it literally shows you that the trilobites existed only in those layers that they call the Paleozoic era. You don't find them in the higher levels. All right? And then the Mesozoic era, the age of the dinosaurs, the geologic record shows a cutting off of everything. So this shows you the physical description of, in essence, that catastrophe and the death of the dinosaurs, followed then by certain creatures that existed in both, which we conclude, therefore, they are ones that God brought back in the recreation. They existed in the pre-Adamic world. They also existed in the post-Adamic world, but they're very few. Mostly the age of mammals had creatures that you did not find in that initial world, which is in the original, the deeper sedimentary layers. So here's a few paragraphs from this 1977 article entitled The Bible and the Dinosaur World. It's got four major portions of this article divided in four facts. The first ones are repetitive ones we've already covered, so I'm just going to give you their titles. Fact number one, it says there is a vast difference between the world of man and that of dinosaurs. Fact number two, the world of the dinosaurs and the modern world of mammals are not intermixed in the fossil record. Fact number three, the many dating methods show dinosaurs lived millions of years ago. If it wasn't millions of years ago, it was at least a long, long time before man ever was put on the earth. Fact number four, and this is the one I'm going to cite more specifically. Fact number four, both the Bible and the stratigraphic record conflict with the view that Noah's flood killed the dinosaurs. This is the one we want to get to. And here's what it says. Most fundamentalists believe that all life dates from the creation week of Genesis. According to this view, all fossils must therefore have been formed since the creation of man, about 6,000 years ago. Thus, many fundamentalists call upon Noah's flood as the mechanism which killed off the dinosaurs and produced the fossils we now find. But Genesis 6:19 clearly states that, quote, of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shall thou bring into the ark to keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female, unquote. I read that to you. The article says dinosaurs were land-dwelling, air-breathing creatures and should therefore have been on the ark. If they were alive at that time, therefore, they would not have been killed by the flood and would still be alive today. Now, there are a number of creatures that God made during that creation, a recreation week, which have since become extinct, but not the majority of them. So the fundamentalists have to say, well, yes, they were on Noah's Ark. And if you go to some of these exhibits, you know, that have like the Ark, back in Kentucky, I think I haven't been there, but I think they actually show dinosaurs on the ark. So they have to believe dinosaurs were on the ark. How do they explain the fact that there are none of these great? Why no brontosaurus, T-Rex, you know, stegosaurus, pterodactyls? How come these things aren't here? I guess they've either been, they since went extinct, or else, again, the few of them which I talked about who believe they're still hiding in the Congo in Africa somewhere. And like Yeti, you know, they just haven't been able to get a clear picture of them. But they're there. No, they're not. And they weren't on the ark, and they weren't brought back by God in their recreation. The article says, the same holds true for the flying reptiles which would have been in the ark and should have survived. Again, fowls were also brought onto the ark to preserve them. So they couldn't fly for a year above the water until dry land came out again. Maybe the birds lasted longer than a lot of other things, but eventually they went into the water and died. The same holds true for the flying reptiles, which would have been in the ark and should have survived. The marine reptiles also should have survived. Yeah, what about all those big marine reptiles that don't exist today? They wouldn't have been killed by Noah's flood, would they? Everything in the oceans survived. Why aren't they here? The marine reptiles also should have survived, even though they would not have been on the ark. But the rocks tell us that when the land dinosaurs died, so did the marine reptiles. I think that's incredibly fascinating. We're talking about the original catastrophe at the hands of Satan and those demons that destroyed the earth before man was put on the earth. Everything died, both land creatures as well as marine life. That's what those lower level rocks in the strata show. Everything in the ocean as well as on the land died. Not so with Noah's flood. Only the air breathers died in Noah's flood, and that's also what the geology shows. So this says, the rocks tell us that when the land dinosaurs died, so did the marine reptiles, the ichthyosaurs, the plesiosaurs, The Mosasaurs and all the kids who like have all this stuff memorized will be laughing at my mispronunciation. This despite the fact that they were doubtless excellent swimmers and should have survived just as other fish and sea creatures did. So there's really, it says, no way to fit the dinosaurs in with Noah's flood. Remember, the fossil record shows that the dinosaurs, flying reptiles, and marine reptiles lived at a different time. They are not found intermixed with the fossils of modern birds, mammals, or man. If all these life forms had lived at the same time, they should be mixed in the fossil record. Some try to rationalize the clear separation between dinosaurs and man by saying that when Noah's flood came, dinosaurs were, quote, swept away first, but that men and other mammals swam or were bloated or by some means survived, so their remains were found on top of the Earth's sedimentary strata. But man and many other mammals are vastly inferior swimmers compared to fish and marine reptiles. So really, do you think that one of these big marine reptiles would have died first before human beings? That makes no sense. When you realize it says, when you really analyze this argument, it just doesn't hold water. I think that was funny. For these four reasons, the article says, we must reject the traditional fundamentalist idea that the earth and all life forms that have ever appeared were created a mere 6,000 years ago. That's only going to be a conclusion that someone who's trying to force the facts to fit their dogma, just like the Catholic Church did in the Middle Ages. And it's not supported by the science. All right, back to the Plain Truth article from February 1964. Geology reveals two creations, two worldwide floods, under a subheading, Proof of Rising Floodwaters. The first sedimentary deposits geologists have found are composed of fine particles with few signs of buried life. This is the natural accumulation of erosion in the pre-Adamic world before the terrible catastrophe occurred. Suddenly, the deposits become coarser and contain many fossils. The bottom dwellers of the ocean were usually buried first in the deepest layer of sediment. Then the rising floodwaters of that first destruction buried the plants along with the shoreline. Dunbar, remember I gave you the biography of Professor Dunbar from Yale last time. Dunbar reports that geologists have found in the next higher sedimentary layer fragments of land plants and also fossil forms of scorpions and millipedes from his work Historical Geology, page 171. Did these land plants and scorpions and millipedes evolve over long eons of time from trilobites? No. All the fossil record proves is that they suddenly died. Again, so this is now back focused on debunking evolutionary theory, but I think it's still all relevant. If life evolved, it says, why did feathered wings and many other features appear in fossil life fully developed? Why haven't we found fossil remains of transition stages between leather wings of the flying reptiles and the feathered wings of birds? Why have evolutionists and geologists failed to discover the fossil remains of one single intermediate species? Yet they have discovered multiple millions of fossils which are strictly classified under well-defined kinds. If life did evolve slowly from the simple to the complex, then there would have been a far greater number of intermediate states or varieties than of the fixed species. And in other words, it's also what they call the missing link. There is no missing link. Well, it's missing because it doesn't exist and it never existed. But there is no life form that was a transition of evolution from simple life to a complex life. And it doesn't exist in the geologic record, no matter how much they try and force it. Continuing, the article says, as the rising floodwaters began to sweep upward, small shoreline plants and animals were next buried and became fossils. The geologic record demonstrates that as the pre-Adamic floodwaters continued to rise, vast numbers of scaleless fishes were soon buried in the mud and silt, which settled down to make the next higher sedimentary layers. This, again, presumes that the original creation in the age of the reptiles were also drowned. And that's the only thing I call into question. I just say it doesn't have to be. What is true is that their carcasses were all buried at the same time, but it doesn't mean necessarily that they were all killed by drowning. They could have already been crispy critters by the time that their carcasses were buried by the waters. The article says, so many fossilized fish are found in the rocks laid down by this stage of the pre-Adamic destruction, and geologists claim these so-called Devonian rocks were laid down in the Age of Fishes. That's from a geologist named Stokes, page 227. There was no Age of Fishes, only a time when fish died in vast numbers in the sea. So the fact that you've got all these layers does not debunk at all that there was a single cataclysmic event which killed everything. But just some were buried sooner than others as the catastrophe unfolded. All right, the next subtitle is called Rising Flood Devastates Jungles. Now we're still talking, this is still harkening back to the original destruction before the creation of man. But it links up to Noah's flood again in a bit here. The raging floodwaters, which were but a part of this pre-Adamic destruction, rose higher and higher, engulfing the jungles and the lowlands. This catastrophe engulfed and uprooted whole forests. Plant remains often were washed into huge piles, covering them with deep layers of mud and silt. These masses of vegetable remains later were crushed by the weight of the mud and the silt. Why is that important? Today, the article says, we know them as the coal beds of the so-called Paleozoic rocks. Again, it goes to answer the question, why do we have coal? And where do you get coal? Where do you dig the coal out from? You dig it from the lower layers, not from the layers laid down in the last 6,000 years, which would have counted for Noah's flood. You get them from the layers of this original destruction. Because in essence, coal was not created by Noah's flood. That's the conclusion of the articles. Now, if you want to study and come up with a counter-argument, feel free. The conclusion of our articles is that coal was not produced by the carcasses of dead animals during Noah's flood. Only that was destroyed during the angelic rebellion. At the harder, and I would tell you, so why? Well, number one, I would tell you is that how long did Noah's flood last before the waters receded? A year, year plus. As opposed to having thousands and maybe millions of years in between the original destruction of Satan of the surface of the earth and the recreation. So, according to our belief that the Bible talks about a gap between an original creation and destruction and then the recreation described in Genesis 1 and 2, what that original catastrophe then included elements that actually compressed all of this living matter. However, whether they drowned or whether they were dead before their carcasses were ultimately covered in silt, but then that actually created the pressure which turned all of that into oil and into coal, the plant and the animal's carcasses. Okay, so from that original catastrophe is where we get our energy. I just still continue to find that fascinating. Not from the destruction that God instituted in bringing Noah's flood, but it was created in essence by the rebellion of the angels, and that's where we get our oil and our coal. That's not stated in any of the articles, but I put all those pieces together, and that's literally what it's saying. That Satan literally was responsible for creating the deposits that we use today for energy. And you tell me whether you think that fossil fuels and everything else that we're using today and the societies we've built around that energy is a blessing or a curse. No, that's all become a part of Babylonianism as well. That's a different topic. Continuing this article, subheading called Coal Formed by Pre-Adamic Flood. Here's what it says. Do geologists know that coal was formed by this pre-Adamic flood? The evolutionary geologist Stokes makes this surprising statement, quote, even though all the biological, geographic, and climatic factors were favorable, coal still could not form unless plant debris was submerged and buried by sediments, unquote. From his work entitled Essentials of Earth History, page 216. So here's an evolutionist who admits what's required physically in order to produce coal. In other words, the article says, this evolutionary geologist admits coal can be formed only when huge masses of trees and plants have been swept up by onrushing floodwaters and covered up with layers of mud and silt. Stokes explained why coal beds could not have been formed by the swamp forest and jungles alternately rising above and sinking below sea over a long period of time. This fiction, however, is still taught in school. He said, quote, nor could the land have alternatively risen and sunk because a bed of coal to be preserved must remain permanently buried and, of course, could not survive exposure to erosion. Also from the book entitled Essentials of Earth History, page 216. Stokes also admitted, quote, obviously more than a heavy growth of vegetation is required for coal formation. The plant debris must be buried, compressed, and protected from erosion and from intensive metamorphosis. Page 215 in the same book. In other words, our article says, the only possible way coal beds can be formed is for great quantities of plant matter to be washed together, deposited in one spot, and then quickly covered over with heavy layers of mud and sand, which compress the huge piles of plant remains into coal. World travelers know that coal is not being formed in the jungles of the earth today. Plant life dies, decays, and rots into humus. It is obvious that coal is not now being formed. Have you ever thought about that? If you think it's just the natural organic process of living and dying plant life, then we should be having new coal being produced. But it doesn't happen. So what happened in antiquity to create coal? Something unique happened that created the coal beds. It's not happening today. I allow for the possibility that the meteors or other things besides the water could have been influence in it. But it certainly was unique to that original catastrophe, and it wasn't repeated by Noah's flood. Just the fact of rising waters for a year on the earth in the days of Noah did not create oil, and it did not create coal. Only in that first catastrophe did those things become manifest. The article says, what greater proof of a worldwide pre-Adamic flood do evolutionary geologists need before they will admit that the true facts of science agree with the simple, plain truth of God's word? Then, subtitle, Rising Floodwaters Wash Away the Plains. What would you naturally expect to find preserved as fossils as the waters rose over the hills and plains? The fastest running animals would flee to the tops of the highest hills before being drowned, if they were drowned, I will say, and not already incinerated. Note also that larger animals would float longer than small but comparatively heavier animals such as trilobites. Under a subheading called Dinosaurs Exterminated, Professor Dunbar, also said dinosaurs were now in their heyday. Page 306 of his work, Geological Geology, or Historical Geology. What he should have said was that the later stages of the pre-Adamic flood, as the floodwaters reached the higher hills, the dinosaurs were rapidly exterminated and buried and became fossils. That's all we know. They suddenly died. We don't know the story before. Dunbar unwittingly referred to this pre-Adamic destruction when he said, quote, throughout the long Mesozoic era, reptiles completely dominated life on the earth, but at its close, their dynasty suddenly collapsed. Historical Geology, page 404. I read that was in one of the older articles I read to you last time. Another geologist voiced his amazement. Walther called this sudden destruction of the dinosaurs, quote, the time of the great dying. Dunbar quotes Walther on page 348 of his work. The evolutionary geologist G.G. Simpson, which I referenced last time as well, made clear that geologists don't understand what happened. He said, quote, the most puzzling event in the history of life on the earth is the change from the Mesozoic age of reptiles to the age of mammals. From his book, Mammals and Land Bridges, Washington Academy of Science Journal, volume 30, page 137 to 163, if anybody wants to look that up. Geologists recognized that something drastic occurred during the time the upper rocks of the pre-Adamic age, the so-called Mesozoic era, were laid down. They failed to realize that these rocks were laid down suddenly instead of over an assumed 500 million of years. Not having the foundation of all knowledge, the truth of the Bible, they utterly failed to grasp the fact that a worldwide pre-Adamic flood suddenly exterminated all plants and animals. They guessed wrong about nearly 500 million years. Subheading entitled Puzzled Geologist. When Dunbar said the reptilian hordes gave way to a spectacular rise in warm-blooded vertebrates, he failed to realize that he had discovered evidence that a worldwide catastrophe had exterminated these reptilian hordes and that God later recreated the world of man and the mammals. All evolutionary geologists recognized that something drastic occurred during the time the upper rocks of the pre-Adamic age were being laid down. But because they won't look in their Bibles, they can't understand what happened. Properly understood, both the Bible and geology clearly prove a worldwide catastrophe destroyed the pre-Adamic creation. Evolutionary geologists today find fossil remains of that age in the deeper and older sedimentary rocks. The fossil record makes clear that the smaller animals were buried before the larger, faster-running animals which fled the onrushing water to higher ground. Age of pre-Adamic world not revealed. Because the Bible doesn't tell us, we don't know how long the earth remained a paradise or how long the water-covered ruin lasted. The world is certainly old, but God would not have allowed the desolation to long remain. But the Bible does reveal that almost 6,000 years ago, God recreated and refashioned the earth in a literal week of 7 days. He placed Adam and Eve and the plants and animals of today on the earth and commanded them to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth, Genesis 1:28. Only 1,656 years after Adam and Eve were created, their descendants became so wicked that God again destroyed the world with the flood of Noah's day. All living, breathing creatures of this second creation of the time of Adam and Eve were destroyed except Noah and his family and the animals that were protected in the ark. Notice this. Noah's flood, which occurred approximately 2370 to 2369 BC, left an entirely different set of sedimentary layers and fossils than did the destruction that is described in verse 2. Of the first chapter of Genesis. These two different and distinct sets of sedimentary layers and their fossils came from two entirely different periods of time in the earth's history. You can readily tell the difference between rocks of the pre-Adamic world and the sedimentary rocks laid down by Noah's flood. The pre-Adamic rocks are usually so hard they can be dug into only with cutting tools and dynamite. I found this interesting. Those lower levels of rock are harder and almost impenetrable. Let me read that again. The pre-Adamic rocks are usually so hard they can be dug into only with cutting tools and dynamite, but the sedimentary rocks laid down by Noah's flood can in general still be dug into with a pick and shovel. So I challenge the fundamentalists who think the whole earth is only 6,000 years old to explain the difference in those sedimentary layers. Geologists, the article says, have found fossils of cold-blooded reptiles in the older and deeper rocks, but in the newer rocks, geologists find fossils primarily of warm-blooded mammals associated with man's world. Of course, certain cold-blooded reptiles were recreated. Even a few dinosaur-like reptiles may have reappeared in the second creation. Just as in the pre-Adamic flood, Noah's flood also buried the heavy-shelled sea life, first, then the smaller animals that could not flee fast enough to escape the rising floodwaters. Finally, just as in the pre-Adamic catastrophe, the raging floodwaters in Noah's day engulfed the very biggest and fastest animals that had fled to the top of the highest hills. Noah's flood buries shell creatures first. The evolutionary geologists again unwittingly tell the story. Sturton, so here's another evolutionary geologist named Sturton, said, quote, in sheltered areas of the fine silty bottom of the oceans, where wave action was greatly reduced, species of the gastropod Turritella, small seashell forms, occurred in abundance, from his work called Time, Life, and Man, page 307. The truth is not that they were evolving in abundance, but rather they were being buried by the millions suddenly by Noah's flood. As the waters of Noah's flood rose, slightly larger types of animals were caught up in the swirling water and deposited in the next highest sedimentary layers. Dunbar said that among the animals were diminutive horses, small hornless rhinoceroses, equally small titanotheras, tiny cameloids, the squirrel-like rodents, bats and small primates. None of these attained a considerable size, and the largest would hardly have stood waist-high to man, from his work, Historical Geology, page 428. Evolutionists misinterpret this evidence and claim the fossil remains of these small mammals are proof these mammals were evolving from the smaller to the larger. These slightly larger animals were still too small to flee the rapidly rising waters of Noah's flood for long. They too were caught up in the rising floodwaters and covered with mud and silt at most a few days after the heavy-shelled forms were buried. Yet geologists theorize that millions of years elapsed between the two deep layers laid down by Noah's flood. Rather than prove evolution took place, the fossils prove evolution did not take place. As the waters of Noah's flood continued to rise over higher and higher ground, larger and larger mammals were caught up in the swirling waters and buried in the mud and silt. In the rocks laid down in the middle of the sediments deposited by Noah's flood, geologists have found, quote, the true carnivores, flesh eaters, among which were dogs, small fox-like animals, true cats, saber-toothed cats, wild turkeys, and peccaries, unquote, from Sturton, Time and Life of Man, page 324. We're almost there, folks. One more paragraph. Subtitle, Mistaken Ages. Geologists falsely assume that the larger mammals evolved slowly over eons of time from the smaller mammals. What the fossil record really proves is that the larger mammals died later. In the upper sedimentary layers of Noah's flood, so-called Miocene rocks, Dunbar states that, quote, cattle, sheep, and goats, which belong to the family Bovidae, and which also include the bison, the musk ox, and the antelopes, are found. Historical Geology, page 415. The cattle, sheep, and goats were buried in the upper sedimentary rocks laid down by Noah's flood because they grazed on the higher plains and in the mountain valleys. They were therefore buried in the mud and silt in the later stages of Noah's flood. They were not evolving, as geologists assume. They were fleeing. One final puzzle can easily be understood in the light of Bible truth. Geologists do not realize why the fossil record in the highest rock layers laid down by Noah's flood is often difficult, if not impossible, to interpret. Your Bible again makes clear the answer. Quote, the waters return from off the earth continually, Genesis 8:3. In other words, for 150 days, great tides rolled back and forth, mixing and remixing the mud of the sedimentary layers as the floodwaters receded. I stop there and insert again the other element this article does not take in consideration, the mixing that likely took place from those fountains which came up like a big blender and would have mixed a lot of things together. Final statement in this article, yes, the Bible stands proved. The key to understanding the geology of the ancient rocks is at last revealed. The knowledge has been in the Bible all these years, unquote. All right, so I know I hit you with a lot, and those of you who don't like to hear me read, I thank you for bearing with me on that. Again, some of you, you would not read this. You would not go out there and read this. So I made you sit through it and hear it, even if not all of it stuck with you. What is my point? We have reason to believe there were two catastrophes that destroyed life on this earth. The angelic rebellion, before man was ever put on the earth, and subsequently, Noah's flood. And I guarantee you that there is more evidence for that fact than any of these other theories, either put forward by the evolutionary scientists or by the fundamentalist Christians who think they're, you know, the defenders of the Bible. No, they are not. There is no explanation that fits better than that which we were taught through the ministry of Herbert Armstrong in the Radio Church of God and the Worldwide Church of God, that there really was a gap in time between the first world as God created and the recreation which took place when he put man upon the earth for the very first time less than 6,000 years ago. That's what the geology supports. We have more evidence to support that gap theory than either one of these two camps that are trying to force their dogmatic religion, either evolutionary science or else fundamentalist young earth creationists. They all have major problems with their conclusions and try to force an explanation. The geology actually supports what we believe because it's the fact. It's the truth. And as I already quoted to you before, in our church literature, we're not afraid of science. Good science supports divine revelation because it literally is what happened in the scientific record. So my concluding statement on this sub-series, again, I gave you this 10-sermon series on the Genesis creation as a confirmation of part of the faith once delivered. And it is debated, and there are former members of the church who now take exception with this just because Herbert Armstrong is the one who taught it. Because they hate everything Herbert Armstrong, they're going to dismiss the gap theory as well, to their own detriment. It is true, it was revealed by Jesus Christ, even though he used the foolishness of preaching, including through a chosen servant like Herbert Armstrong. So my concluding statement is this. If you do not believe that the earth is older than 6,000 years, I ask you this, what is your proof compared to that we've offered here? What evidence do you have for whatever you think you believe in opposition? Most of all, how do you decide who committed the first sin? An angel or a man? That's the heart of this whole issue. Who committed the first sin? An angel or a man? The Genesis creation matters because what you believe on these questions proves whether you accept the faith delivered by Jesus Christ through a chosen servant or something that came out of the mind of a human being. Which is it?
The Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented the 63rd message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled, Just What Do You Mean, Faith Once Delivered? Given in Eugene, Oregon, June 17th, 2023.